NBA All-Star Weekend, possible destinations for an NFL quarterback, and more. You're listening to The Hive with Devin Beasley, where you get the buzz on all sports all across the nation. Thursday afternoon, we have a great half hour headed your way. Thank you to everyone who's taking the time out of their day to join us. Got an exciting one this week. Big speculations for trades in the NFL. Going to dig into that in a little bit. I'm ready. You all are ready. Let's go. NBA All-Star Weekend. The NBA's big weekend that brings the best players together for a few days of fun. Except for one problem. People are struggling to have fun watching the NBA All-Stars. Just looking at the average viewership for all the All-Star games over the last 20 years, this year was one of the lowest years. 2024 only had 5.5 million viewers on average. In fact, outside of last year, which only had 4.6 million average viewers, this year, like I said, lowest viewership in the last 20 years. Some people do think that the All-Star game is too relaxed, including the commissioner. This year, for the first time, the score for the winning team eclipsed 200 points. A lot of times, it's just dribble down the court, maybe a pass or two, and then shoot. And a lot of times, it tends to be a circus shot. You see different kinds of dunks, which are entertaining, but then you've got guys like Damian Lillard, Steph Curry. They go for those half-court shots, and they make them, which is great. But it's a lot of circus shots. There's a lot of different reasons that the game is as relaxed as it is, as high as the scoring is. But the biggest of which is the players don't want to get hurt. It's the middle of the NBA season. Some teams' playoff chances are on the line. The players are well aware of that. And there's no way guys like Luka or Bam Adebayo are going to play hard when the future of their team's season is hanging in the balance. On top of that, with that being said, there's no way guys like Jason Tatum or Anthony Edwards are going to play hard because their teams are on top of their respective conferences and they're not going to put that in jeopardy. It's just not going to happen. Adam Silver keeps saying, the game isn't competitive enough. You disappointed me. But he has to understand that this isn't going to improve without some major compensation behind it for both of the All-Star teams. If even that, he's going to have to do something like the in-season tournament to get these guys to take it a bit more seriously. You know, $500,000 per player for the winners, anywhere between $100,000 and $250,000 for the losers. That still might not be enough. But there can be more solutions to this. With this kind of, you know, put together an All-Star weekend that I've put together, you can either eliminate or keep the All-Star game itself. But the NBA really should experiment with events similar to what the NFL does. Players were concerned about getting hurt, so they took away the contact. They now do flag football. It's minimal contact. It's almost like a field day in high school. They do different kinds of events like dodgeball, quarterback throwing drills, different kinds of things like that. Here's what I have. They can still keep this as a whole weekend thing. Friday, you have the rookie showcase and the celebrity game. Maybe a G League All-Star game, something like that. Saturday, do the WNBA versus NBA three-point shootout. I loved that, by the way. Wait until Caitlin Clark gets into the WNBA. Can't wait to see her do that. Do the skills challenge that night too. I'd also love to see some kind of rookies versus vets event, even if it's just a two-quarter game. But that would be a great way to end the night. That's probably the big event night for this. And then, you know, Sunday, whether you keep the All-Star game or not, a 3v3 tournament needs to happen. Maybe a 1v1, but a 3v3 tournament needs to happen. Have each team in the NBA decide what their 3v3 team would be, and then after they're approved by the NBA, let the fans vote for their top eight teams. Once those eight teams are decided, you have a single elimination tournament, going to 24 in singles and doubles for all the marbles. Who wouldn't want to see a 3v3 tournament game with Giannis, Lillard, and Middleton going up against Durant, Booker, and Beal? 3v3. There's no supporting cast there. It's going to prove who exactly is the best three, you know, big three out there. Possibilities are endless with this one, folks. Fans have been asking for a 1v1 thing or a 3v3 tourney for a while. Time to make it real. Time to keep the All-Star Weekend relevant. The other thing, too, the reason why it's to 24 and not to 21 gives you a reason to pay homage to Kobe Bryant. Adam Silver isn't going to be able to make the All-Star game really matter to any of the players. They're never really going to take it as seriously as he wants them to. And it's time for him to sit back and retool how this weekend is going to work. The NFL draft is quickly approaching, and it's no secret Caleb Williams is expected to be the number one pick this year. The reason I say expected to be is because we always see some kind of upset pick, and while there's little to no chance that this number one pick gets upset, we've seen crazier things happen. 3,600 passing yards, 30 touchdowns, only 5 interceptions this past season. That looks like an NFL-ready quarterback. Yeah, Caleb Williams may be the first USC quarterback to be really successful since Carson Palmer. Kind of holding my breath on that. USC hasn't exactly produced the best quarterbacks out there recently. Chicago, they hold the number one pick this year, and there's no indication that they're going to trade down. So it looks like Caleb Williams will be headed there. I'm seeing some signs of Washington and maybe Atlanta trying to trade up, but we'll have to wait and see. As an NFL quarterback, though, I kind of look at the Bears and I say, ooh, that's the last place I want to sign. No offensive lines and no protection to me. Minimal targets to throw to. Yeah, I think I'll pass on Chicago. But this is the draft. Caleb Williams might not have a choice. He's declared for the NFL. He's openly said that there are teams he'd like to go to, the Dolphins being the front runners. Then you have the Niners and the Raiders. But despite that, he'd be willing to play anywhere. I think Chicago jumps on him right away. And that leaves us with a big question here, and that is, what happens to Justin Fields? Well, a trade seems to be the most likely outcome. And I don't exactly blame the Bears. Yeah, he runs the ball well, but he really struggles sometimes with throwing. You can chalk some of that up to not having many targets, but his throws just look bad at times. He looks rattled. He doesn't look like he's comfortable. And some of that can be chalked up to the NFL or the Bears' lack of an NFL caliber line, but the other half of it is Justin Fields getting in his own head and just not being a great thrower of the football. He's just uncomfortable sending the ball through the air. And that's not a project that the Bears are willing to work on. So without further ado, here are my top three trade destinations for Justin Fields. Number one is the Las Vegas Raiders. Jimmy Garoppolo has been suspended for the first two games of this coming season due to a PED violation. I believe the actual report was he was taking a medication that had a PED in it, and he wasn't aware of it, and he did not notify the NFL that he was taking said medication. Regardless of that, the Raiders are ready to move on to a new quarterback. I do think the Bears should ask for Hunter Renfro, and I think Hunter Renfro would have to be in the trade. I think he's a good piece to kind of dangle in front of Chicago because it gives the Bears another target right away for Caleb Williams to throw to when they've had trouble getting targets for Justin Fields to throw to. They also have the draft picks to make this happen. They shouldn't have to give up a first-round pick for Justin Fields. They'll have their future QB now to go along with a new head coach. Number two is the Pittsburgh Steelers. With the Steelers not having a high enough pick to be able to draft one of the top QBs in the class, they could look at Fields. We're only saying that there's three or four quarterbacks that are going to be picked in the first round. So they're going to be picked more than likely in the top five, at least the first three will. The fourth guy might slip a little bit, go down to the Broncos, but for all intents and purposes, the Steelers aren't going to grab one right away. So they're going to look at Fields. And honestly, let's be honest, anything is currently better than Kenny Pickett. Yeah, you thought you had something there, and he just fell on his face. It's fine. You win some, you lose some in terms of the Steelers franchise. Kenny Pickett, I don't think, is going to be out of the league at all by any stretch of the imagination. They may actually hang on to him to be Justin Fields' backup if they make this trade. Fields is somewhat of a project as well, but he can help round out the Steelers' offense, and he'll be able to take the time to perfect his throwing arm. The Steelers would also move up my ladder in that sense, and they'd become a team that's a little bit closer to a playoff appearance, as long as they upgraded that QB position. And last but not least, the Atlanta Falcons. Look, it's no question, Desmond Ridder isn't the QB of the future in the ATL. This is one team I think Fields can actually fit seamlessly in. Atlanta already has an amazing rushing game when they're all healthy, and Fields is primarily a running quarterback. Pair that up together and some decent receivers to throw to, and that's a good offense. Do they make the playoffs the first year around with it? No, I really don't think so. But you know who else has an offense exactly like that? The Baltimore Ravens, a team that was one win away from beating the Kansas City Chiefs, the team that has now learned their lesson and isn't going to come off of the run when they're playing the team with the worst run defense in the league. They're going to draw comparisons to that Baltimore offense if they get a running QB to go along with their deep running back core. That could be an entertaining move for Atlanta. And those right there, that's kind of my top three. Those are my three predictions for Justin Fields' move, should the Bears hang on to that first overall pick. Now, for me, I'd say they do. We'll see Caleb Williams in a Bears uniform next year. And as a counterpart of that, Justin Fields will be in a different one. There's a couple other teams that might sneak in there and try to move for him, maybe to have him around as a backup, but I don't think he's quite backup material. I think he is still a starting quarterback somewhere. It's just not going to be with the Bears next year. And for him, I'd be happy for Justin Fields as well. It just means Fields can go somewhere with a little bit of a better offensive line and hopefully some better targets to throw to. So now it's time for our two-minute drill, where we listen to you. These comments or questions come from the previous week's comments on the Podbean app or our Facebook and Instagram page. Today's comment comes from the Podbean app, and it's from the notorious Robbie at P. Robbie asks, can we get a prediction for the Championship Four for the upcoming NASCAR Cup Series and this season? Well, Robbie, you absolutely can. Love hearing from you. Your 2 minutes starts now. So keep in mind that NASCAR races are some of the hardest things to predict, but we're going to try to take it a step farther now and predict who we're going to see in the Championship Four. We can keep track of this as well and see how close I get. I'm not going to give a championship winner yet. I want to get through a couple of races first before we get to a championship winner. Right now, I have my guy in my head. He's on this list. You can do with that what information you want. That's as much as I'm giving you. So let's see how close we get. Here we go. Number one on my list, William Byron. Byron has come into his own over at Hendrick Motorsports over the course of his career. He's won the Daytona 500 this year and isn't going to slow down one bit. He'll be one of the best, if not the best, Chevys out there this year. He'll have a multi-win season, and he'll have a consistent run in the playoffs, which is going to land him in the Championship Four. Do not look for him to finish outside of the top 15 very often at all, especially in the playoffs. He's going to really snap into action. Hendrick's been kind of a team that's shown some inconsistencies in the playoffs overall. I think they're really going to buckle down, and they're going to have three, if not all four of their drivers in a serious hunt for the championship four. Byron's going to be the one to come out on top, though. Number two, Christopher Bell. Not only will Christopher Bell be the one Toyota in the championship four, he'll be the only Joe Gibbs Racing driver in the round of eight. Everybody else is going to get eliminated by the round of 12 or before. He's very quickly approaching the prime of his career, and if Denny Hamlin doesn't keep up with him this year, he's going to be the best Toyota driver in NASCAR for the foreseeable future. I don't just think he'll make the championship four. I think he'll be out front leading laps. He's going to be dominant at times in the final race of the season. And he's gonna rebound after getting wrecked the last time. After blowing a tire and hitting the wall the last time he was in a championship four. Number three, Ryan Blaney. Ryan Blaney is going to completely ignore a championship hangover, although that's not what it's going to look like during the regular season. So don't count your chickens before they hatch. He's going to squeak into the playoffs, barely, and then he's just going to catch fire. The season for Blaney, that being said, is going to be extremely similar to last season, catching fire in the postseason and being somewhat inconsistent in the regular season. He came down to the wire before we knew he was going to make the playoffs even. But he's going to catch fire in the postseason, and he's going to make the championship four. So he's going to try to hunt down that back-to-back this year. And our fourth and final driver is Joey Logano. Logano is going to be right up there with Bell as one of the best drivers this season. Logano's going to have a multi-win season, and he's not going to put up with any funny business either. He's going back to old-school Logano. If he's faster than you are, and you're in his way, he's going to move you without a second thought. And it's up to you not to junk your car. He's out for a championship this year. He's going to stop at nothing to get there. So that right there, those are kind of my predictions for the final four. And with that, it concludes our two-minute drill. Robbie, love hearing from you. And remember, if you want to be featured on our two-minute drill segment, leave a comment under this week's episode on the Podbean app or on our Facebook or Instagram DMs, and you're in the running. Keep those comments flowing. If you aren't picked 1 week, don't worry. We do a two-minute drill every single week, so you can still get picked one of those weeks. The Daytona 500 took place this past week, and it was honestly an extremely good race. I like to see it. We had several different leaders. We didn't have somebody really, really dominant. Joey Logano led more laps than anybody out there. It was very competitive. A lot of side-by-side driving. They didn't get strung out too often. End of the stages were just as competitive. The most disappointing thing that I saw, I had two, I guess. The most disappointing thing that I had seen was six laps in, and we already have a wreck, and it takes out one of NASCAR's brightest future drivers in Carson Hocevar. He's a bright spot in NASCAR's future, and he got junked six laps in. Jimmy Johnson survived it, but Hocevar got dumped, and I was super disappointed because that was my dark horse. And so, you know, the racing gods just went, nope, we're going to wreck. So we had that, and that was caused by, I believe, if I remember correctly, it was Alex Bowman. No, that wasn't Alex Bowman. Brad Keselowski got pushed too hard, went into the side of another driver. I believe it was John Hunter Nemechek who went into the side of the 38, and the 38 collected Hocevar. So that was super, super disappointing. That was, I was watching the race with my buddy, and I turned and I went, oh, no. Because I think he had a chance to finish top five that night. I think he had a chance to win it. But that was my most disappointing thing. The most enjoyable thing was to see the side-by-side racing again. The last few years, we've seen the drivers get strung out in these long lines, and it just stays that way until the end of the stage or the end of the race. And we actually got to see something cool, too. We got to see them really conserve. There were points in the race where they were only going 170 mile an hour, and then you go towards the end of the stage, and they're with the draft and driving side by side, they're going almost 200. So that was honestly really fun to see come back into the sport. I'm not the biggest fan of the single file, you know, this is NASCAR where I can take a nap. This was something that you had to have your eyes on the entire time. So Daytona's still on my bucket list. I haven't made it down there for a race yet, but I will be there one year. The only other thing that I really had a problem with was how the race had ended. I think there should have been a green-white checker. Ross Chastain and William Byron are fighting for the finish. William Byron causes a wreck at the end, regardless of whether it was his fault or not. His car was responsible for causing the wreck. And then they throw the flag, in my opinion, just after they crossed the line. And it kind of looked like NASCAR waited. So I was hoping for a green-white checker. I think it's what everybody else wanted. It was kind of a disappointing way to end the race. But William Byron takes home the Daytona 500 win for Hendrick Motorsports. It was a really, really fun race to watch. Really good win for him. We did start our paint scheme of the week this week on our Facebook page. So if you guys didn't get to see that, I can tell you what they are, but you can't really get to see them. So for our Cup Series, we went with Chase Elliott's Napa Auto Parts Chevy. I like the blue so much better than I liked the white that they did in previous years. The all blue car looks amazing. The white number stands out. The yellow number on the roof stands out. It all looks clean. It all looks good. And Napa really utilizes the entire surface of the car. For the Xfinity series, remember we're doing one per series. We had Daniel Dye's Championship Container Corporation Chevy. The red and the yellow popped really well. The way that they did the accents, where it accented the white and it kind of curved around the white and around the body of the car, it looks like it flows. It looks fast and it looks good. And then for the truck series, and this may have been my favorite scheme of the entire weekend, it's Tanner Gray's Dead on Tools Toyota. Just the simple black and white with the Dead on Tools logo. It's super clean. The matte logo 15, or the number 15, without like an outline on it or anything. I always love when numbers look like that. Very minimalistic kind of look to it. But the simple black and white looked really, really good. So a great weekend of racing that we saw this past weekend. So I want to thank you guys for joining me today. I know we're a couple minutes short, but I had some other things to take care of today that were a little bit urgent, so I had to take care of that stuff. So we're a couple minutes short on what we're usually at with our podcast, but I want to thank you guys for joining me today. It means the world to see a lot of you guys returning to listen to future episodes. I love the involvement we've seen. We've now had two different people for the 2-minute drill. We're not getting a whole lot of comments on that right away, but remember to leave a comment under this episode for your 2-minute drill. You can also send us a direct message on Facebook or Instagram. If your comment doesn't get picked, don't worry. It just means that I didn't get to, I have to pick, one comment over everything else. And that can be extremely difficult for me sometimes. We've seen in a past episode, even not as part as the 2-minute drill, was just a segment on its own. There was a comment that was so good that I had to put it in the episode itself. So just keep those comments coming. I enjoy looking at them. I enjoy seeing what everybody else's takes are. And I really do enjoy debating them with you. So keep them coming. And you're in the running for a future 2-minute drill. You can find us on Facebook at The Hive with Devin Beasley, or on Instagram at The Hive DB. That's at THEHIVEDB. Check us out on the Podbean app or visit our website at thehivedb.podbean.com. I want to give a special shout out to Brittany Stocker for our logo design. She's the one that did the Hive logo, both of them. We have our primary and our secondary. You can find her at A Shadows Art on Instagram. That's at A-S-H-A-D-O-W-S-A-R-T on Instagram. And check out the rest of her past, present, and future projects. And again, to all of our listeners, wherever you are, however you're listening, thank you for joining us today. You have been listening to The Hive with Devin Beasley, where you get the buzz on all sports all across the nation. Next Thursday, 7 days away. Start counting down because we got another good one coming to you. We'll see you then.